I have a preacher friend who lives in Indiana. I've been friends with him a long time. It's been a while, actually, since I've talked with him. But I remember several years ago, probably 20 years ago, he shared something about his own personal life that was something that I have never experienced, but I know some people do experience on one level or another from time to time, and that is a panic attack. He describes the panic attack to me as this feeling of dread and worry, and just feels like everything's coming down upon him to the point that wherever he is, he feels like he just has to get out of there. So if he is in a car and gets that feeling of loss of control or that stress, he wants to stop the car, he wants to get out of the car. In fact, he told me there had been a couple of times while he was preaching in the pulpit, standing before a group of people assembled, that he felt that panic attack coming on. And I just personally, it's hard for me to imagine that type of feeling. I've never experienced a panic attack. I have experienced different feelings when I've been in the pulpit. There have been a number of times when I, for example, have been preaching and been thinking in the middle of that sermon, this is not good, this is a dud, and I just want to get out of here. But I wouldn't necessarily call that a panic attack. It's just me realizing that it ain't working right now, and I'm not feeling it. But there's a difference in that, in this feeling of being so overwhelmed, and as the graphic for this three-part series shows, you know, here's somebody standing here, and there's this massive rock or mass overhead, and things are falling down, and there's this sense, this feeling of being overwhelmed or dealing with a crisis. And I think one level or another, we've all experienced that to some degree, not the same. I read this past couple of weeks a book by Max Lucado called Anxious for Nothing. And actually, I've gotten some of the thoughts for this lesson from that book. And he says something in that book, and I want you to hear it. He says, you don't laugh often. You don't enjoy the sun. You don't whistle as you walk. And when others do, you give them a look. That look. That, are you naive? Look. You may even give them a word. Haven't you read the news and heard the reports? And seen the studies? Airplanes fall out of the skies. Bull markets go bare. Terrorists terrorize. Good people turn bad. The other shoe will drop. Fine print will be found. Misfortune lurks out there. It's just a matter of time. Anxiety is a meteor shower of what ifs. What if I don't close the sale? What if we don't get the house? What if we can't afford braces for the kids? What if my kids have crooked teeth? What if crooked teeth keep them from having friends, a career, or a spouse? And what if they end up homeless and hungry, holding a cardboard sign that reads, my parents couldn't afford braces for me? Anxiety is trepidation. Do you ever feel stressed out? There's a song that was popular a couple of years ago. In fact, I have it on my playlist from 21 Pilots called Stressed Out. And there's a part in this song that says, wish we could turn back time to the good old days when mama sang to us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. And that was terrible. That was terrible. I'm stressed out by the way I sang that song, by the way. But in that song, and it's a great song and it's really catchy, the words in that song say, I was told when I got older my fears would shrink, but now I'm insecure and I care what people think. My name's Blurry Face and I care what you think. Now, I don't know what blurry face is all about, but I do know that we do live today in the most anxious-filled, stressed-out time in maybe ever. And I know you say, well, there have always been worries, there's always been stress, but statistics bear out that more people are stressed out and worried about things today than they were even 10, 20, or 30 years ago. Things have changed. There is this longing for a simpler time, a simpler way, when things are not as intense and life is not as complicated. The sale of anti-anxiety drugs has quadrupled in the last 10 years. $300 billion a year is spent medically because of stress and anxiety and things related to that, and loss of work and less production at work, and I could go on and on and on and on. And I think there are different reasons for that. I think one of the reasons is just simply the fact that with the rise of the internet and instant messaging and getting all this information, this overload that just overwhelms us, and we get it just like that. I mean, you think about what people went through in World War II, but people in World War II did not get, as it happened, action right there on the front of the line as it's going on and watching it time after time. They went to movies and saw little movie reels of reports from what was happening on the battlefield in World War II. I wonder if what happened then had the technology of today and people were able to see all those things going on just like that as it happened. How that would intensify the stress or the anxiety with what was going on. You think about it. If there was a natural disaster, say a tidal wave, an earthquake in Indonesia about 40 or 50 years ago, you might find out about it maybe 2 days later. If a few years later the same thing happened, you would find out about it by watching the evening news. But today, if it happens, you get the information almost just like that, and we're getting all that negative news, if we want to receive it, right now, instantaneously, over and over again. And then you have the pressure that comes from the social media and the internet phenomenon of wanting to be liked and good and popular and wanting to have a certain kind of image. Actually, I think that's a lot of what this whole Stressed Out song by 21 Pilots is all about. And we're worried. We're worried about the future. We're worried about lives that are spinning out of control. But I believe, and I know many of you believe, there's an answer. And I want us to listen to the words of Jesus in John 14 when he says, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I do not give you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." And then in the 16th chapter, the 33rd verse, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." The words of Jesus speaks to you and speaks to me wherever we are. And I don't know where you are on the spectrum of worry and anxiety. I understand we're all different. If you're familiar at all with the Enneagram, and if you aren't, don't worry about this, but I've read the book on it, The Road Back to You, and I've taken the test, and I'll just tell, for those of you who know about it, I'm a six. And a six in this personality type is somebody who operates many times on fear and many times has this issue related to control and also tends to be a worrier. Some of us just tend to be more that way than others. Some people are a little bit more laid back just by their very nature. And so, you may feel stressed. We all feel stress. And there's nothing inherently wrong with stress. All stress is, per se, is pressure. It might be the pressure to meet a deadline. It might be the pressure to fulfill some responsibility. You may be busy. And so that's not necessarily bad. Anxiety, on the other hand, is a response to that pressure. It's an emotional response. And so the stress are those outside things that we feel, the responsibilities, the deadlines, dealing with the kids, all of those things. And then my anxiety or my worry is something that is an emotion that comes because of that feeling, because I'm dealing with those stresses. And so while it's an emotional reaction, I think on one level we need to understand that anxiety is not necessarily inherently sinful. It's an emotion that we feel. Now, it can become sinful, but it's not sinful in and of itself. Let me look at a passage. Go with me to the book of Philippians real quick. In Philippians, and the reading this morning was from Philippians 4, but I want you to listen to what Paul says about Epaphroditus and his concern about this servant who had been very, very, very sick, and he had been one of Paul's companions. He had been with him some. He had traveled, and he had sent messages back and forth, and he had brought gifts to Paul and was a true servant of Christ. But he was very important to the Philippians. It says in verse 27 of Philippians chapter 3, "Indeed, he was almost ill and almost died." This is Paul speaking about Epaphroditus. "But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but also on me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I'm all the more eager to send him so that when you see him again, you may be glad and I may have less," what? How's it translated there? And it's the same word that's used elsewhere, translated anxiety or worry, "so that I might have less worry," that I might have less anxiety. And so I just want you to know right off the bat, as we're just talking about this whole issue of anxiety and how we deal with it and we feel the pressure, and sometimes we're dealing with that chaos, the worst thing that we can do then is beat up on ourselves or feel like God is beating up on us because we're worried or we're anxious about something. So not only are we anxious about something, then we're anxious because we're not... we shouldn't be anxious, and now we're anxious that we shouldn't be anxious, and God's even more upset with us. That's not the point. Paul is saying in Philippians chapter 4, he's saying anxiety should not dominate your life, and you can deal with the anxiety that you have. Paul himself said, I was spared more anxiety in dealing with this situation, so how do we deal with it? What does Paul say? It would be so nice to, talking about taking medications and anti-anxiety. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to just take a pill and just everything would be great? You've heard somebody say before, take a chill pill. But life's not that way. But Paul says here in Philippians 4, when he talks about this prescription for peace, and here is the big thought of the day, there is a prescription for more peace in our lives. There is a prescription for the anxious, overloaded life. And once again, look at what Paul says in Philippians. "Rejoice in the Lord always." I'll say it again, rejoice. "Let your gentleness be evident to all. God is near. The Lord is near. Don't be anxious about anything, but in everything, in prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard, protect your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Let your mind dwell on these things. And whatever you've learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you." So the first thing I want to stress this morning, and this will probably be my briefest point, and that is there is something we can do. There are steps we can take. We are not powerless to do something related to this pressure that is anxiety when we feel like we've lost control. And one, like I said, a certain amount of stress can be good. How many of you have a test coming up the next couple of weeks in school? You have a test coming up. Are you feeling any stress? Really? Okay. We know Justin never feels stress. But some of you do. Some of you feel that pressure. Maybe you haven't studied as much as you've needed to, and you're feeling a little bit of that pressure, and that's called stress. And what should that motivate you to do if you're feeling that pressure? That should motivate you to do something about it and to take a step that can actually be a positive step in dealing with that stress. Now, if you choose not to study and you procrastinate and you let today go to tomorrow and tomorrow to the next day, the next day, the next day, and then the test is next Friday and it's Thursday and you haven't studied at all for the test, you're really going to be feeling not only the stress about the test, but you're going to be feeling the anxiety too. So stress, it can be a pressure that causes us to take a step to do something that is productive. In the same way, for example, if you feel bad about doing something, guilt, I believe, is not a bad thing in and of itself. God created us with a conscience. And so if we do something that's bad or evil and we feel bad about it, we feel guilty, that pressure or that stress or that guilt is meant to move us to do something to deal with it. And that is, it's meant to push us or move us or motivate us to go to the arms of God and confess our sin where He will forgive us, and then we can have the peace even though we're dealing with that, the stress that comes from the bad things that we've done. And so, point number one, we can do something. We can take steps to deal with the pressure and the anxiety that life has to offer. And so Paul says, whatever you've seen in me, the good things that I've done, the way that I've acted, I want you to pay attention to that, and I want you to do those things. And he says, when you do those things, among other things, when you do those things, the God of peace will be with you. And next week, Nick's going to talk about some of those things in more specific areas as we talk about taking some of those steps. Second thing, on a deeper level, and this is not said per se in this text, but it definitely is implied in the text, even though Paul does not say here in Philippians 4, trust God, it is definitely implied, and he says it elsewhere in the book of Philippians. He says, God is near. Notice this. God is near. Don't be anxious. Now, sometimes when we read something in the Bible, I think it's good that we have verses and we have chapters, and that helps us find things, but that wasn't a part of what Paul did when he originally wrote this. When Paul wrote this, he was writing a letter to the Philippians to encourage them in a number of things related to their Christian lives. He didn't divide it up into verses, and I think sometimes we miss that when we see something before something else, and maybe we don't think it necessarily relates to what it says. But actually, this whole idea of not being anxious or being able to deal with our anxiousness is related not only to what is after it, but it also relates to what is before it. God is near, and there is a God who cares, and you can rejoice in the fact that God is real, and He is sovereign, and that He is in control. God is near. God is near. And it's not just God is near, a God who loves you and personally cares about you and your needs is present and He is with you. There were extensive studies done with soldiers and pilots in World War II, and it was found that those who were on the ground troops, by the 60th day or so, if they were in combat, they were just pretty much numb mentally, pretty much spent. And yet, the fighter pilots, whose mortality rate was about 50%, about one out of two pilots who went up and were directly involved in combat, 50% of those pilots died. Yet, when they contrasted the sense of well-being and satisfaction with the ground troops, not as many percentage-wise of them died as the pilots. The pilots, 90-plus percent, felt good about what they were doing and didn't deal with the anxiety that the soldiers did on the ground. And part of that, it really does make sense. It relates to this whole idea or this concept of control. When you're on the ground and you're fighting in battle, you can just be sitting there and be and a bomb can come, or you can be retreating. And so there is this sense, even though you may be fighting, you have less a sense of control than a pilot who's right there in the cockpit controlling that plane. And even though more of them died, they still felt better about what they were doing. It's all about control. And this feeling, when we feel like we're losing control. I mean, take a trip and get caught in a traffic jam and just test my theory there. Depending on how you are or what your attitude is like. I never have liked traffic jams. I don't like traffic. There's a sense of a loss of control. Now, you know, you have the cell phone, you can call people, you can say, I'm going to be late, I'm sorry, I'm caught in traffic. But it was even worse 20 or 30 years ago when you didn't have immediate access to cell phones. And so my children grew up going on trips with us, and we'd get caught in traffic, and then they would sense that Dad wasn't happy about it. I mean, I wouldn't blow up or just go into a cussing fit or anything like that, but I wasn't happy. It's lost control. You're not in control. You're being controlled by something around you, and you can't do anything about it to control it. And so I remember one trip we took my son, Andrew. He's just like 2 years old, and we got caught in traffic. And here's this two-year-old still in his car seat who lets out a big sigh. Oh, the traffic. And I'm thinking, why do you care? I mean, you're just sitting in your car seat. And then I think, okay, all right, now I get it. Here's the truth. And I've mentioned this in a sermon a while back, and it kind of relates to a previous point I've made. There's so much that we can't control. And the fact is, those people who are the biggest control freaks tend to be the people who worry and get stressed out the most. Because they think somehow that by doing this, taking this step, correcting this, they can fix it. But they find out over time, they think they have something fixed or controlled, and they find out they just can't do it. Because there's so much we can't control. Sometimes we just have to jump off in faith and just say, God, it's yours. I know you care. I can't control it. I trust you because you love me, and I know you're going to work things out. It's kind of like, you know, going on that zip line, if you've ever done that before. I had never gone on a zip line before until a group of us, our small group, went up to the Hendersons, who are members here. Those of you who know Don Diana Henderson, he built his own zip lines. And so we went up there, had a small group event, and I decided I'm going to go on the zip line. And it's getting dark, it's rainy, my shoes are slippery, there's a vertical ladder that goes up to a tiny little platform. And I'm thankful for the Willoughby daughters who were there and helping us out, but the more I thought about it, I put that suit on and got all strapped in, and I'm walking up the steps and my foot is slipping, and all these things are going through my mind. I think, what if I get up there and it's slippery on the platform and I fall about equal to two or three stories, I'll probably die. And so I'm hesitating as I go up, and people are saying, come on, Grady, and Jeannie is down there with the group. And she looked up at me and says, Grady, what are you, chicken? And that was like laying down the gauntlet. And that was just her way. She knows me. That was her way of just motivating me in a kind, gentle way. 2 steps from that platform, just go ahead and do it. Penny Dugan, who is here this morning, where's Penny? Back there. Of course, she did it before me and didn't hesitate. She's fine with it. And here's Grady, just, ugh. But there's that point where you feel like everything's under control and you're all strapped in, and everything probably is okay, but there's still that point when you're all that platform that you have to just let go. Just let go. And trust, in this case, God, that he's going to be with you in that ride. And he's going to carry you. And you're going to get to the end. And you may not know exactly what it looks like. You may not know all the details, but God has your back, and he cares. Trust God, because he has control. And part of that is talking about it to God. Part of that is not only talking about it with others. It's important that we talk to others about these things that cause us worry and stress. But it's important that we, in that faith in God, present those requests to God. And so when Paul says, with prayer, that is reverently and worshipfully, with supplication, the King James says here, it's this idea of asking God, not with arrogance, not with a sense of entitlement, but doing it realizing that he is the giver and I am the needy one. Let your request be made known to God. Ask God. And it's important that we ask. And it's not that God is some stingy God in heaven and doesn't want to give us things or bless us with things. He knows what we need even before we ask, but he wants us to want it, and he wants us to recognize him as the ultimate provider. And be specific when you pray. Maybe it's not, Lord, just be with me tomorrow when I meet with so-and-so. And maybe you have some difficult things to talk about with someone who's a loved one or a coworker, and you're stressed about it because things haven't always been great before when you've had that conversation. Well, Paul says, make your request to God. And when you pray, be as specific as you can about what you need. Kind of like the man in Luke 18 when Jesus comes up to him and says, what do you want me to do? And the man says to Jesus, Lord, I want to receive my sight. Ask. Ask. And part of that faith is also understanding that I don't have to be a slave to my emotions. I don't have to be a slave to my thoughts. That I do have a certain amount of control as I give more and more control to God in letting those things that are good and lovely and pure and right and praiseworthy fill my mind. And so the illustration that Lucado gives in his book about this is that we are the air traffic controllers of our mind. And so we're in the control tower. you know, ultimately it's God who's in the control tower, but just to look at the illustration is that, you know, we have all these thoughts that are going around in our head. And so we're worried about this, we're thinking about that, and all those negative thoughts are out there. It's not going to work out. God doesn't love me. He doesn't care. I'm trapped. And so we have a choice to either wallow in our fret and our chaos and our tension, or to place ourselves in situations or to do things that will help us let our minds think about the good things. And so then we say to that thought up there that says, there's no solution, it's never going to work out, we say, I'm sorry, no clearance for landing. I'm not going to let you land. It's there. We have those thoughts. Sometimes they just come. That's okay. Don't feel bad because you have a thought or you're anxious per se. That's not the point. It's the point that through the power of God and the help of His Spirit, He can work with us in what we can allow or what we allow to dominate and fill our minds. It's kind of like garbage in, garbage out. Or good in, good out. So, whether it's listening to the Bible on tape, or whether it's getting a verse for the day or a thought for the day. One thing I've been doing is I need to exercise, and I'm continuing to exercise, and I'll exercise listening to my music so I can exercise and listen to encouraging, wholesome, God-centered music while I'm at the same time doing something for my body. I'm doing something for my mind. And when I do that, I'm leaving more room for the things that matter most in terms of what fills my mind, and allowing Jesus to fill my mind more, and remembering that it was Jesus who said, come unto me, every one of you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you, what did Jesus say? I will give you rest. Rest. And ultimately, it's about making more room for Jesus. It's about making more room for His Spirit in our lives. More Jesus thoughts. More Jesus mind. Jesus Himself was worried at times. Jesus felt stress. Do you believe it? Was Jesus ever worried? Yes, He was worried. Worry in itself is not a sin. It can become sin or lead to sin. If I'm all anxious all the time, there are ways I can deal with it. I can choose to ignore it or numb myself to it. It's what leads to a lot of addictions. But Jesus was anxious about what He faced. He was so distraught that as He prayed to the Father and made a request to the Father, if it's possible, Father, let this cup pass. So intense was that stress that the Bible says the capillaries reacted in such a way that not only was there sweat, there was blood mixed with the sweat. The Hebrew writer says that Jesus cried out with groanings to the Father. Yeah, He was anxious. But you know, there was that point after the Garden of Gethsemane that when the mob came with their torches and their clubs, Jesus was ready to go. And basically said to Peter and the others, let's go. Let's go. The prayer was answered. The cup didn't pass, but the prayer was answered. We're going to sing a song here in just a sec. The song is "It Is Well With My Soul." And the man who wrote this song was a Presbyterian elder and minister, a prominent lawyer in America, and lost his home in a fire, lost his four-year-old son to scarlet fever, was going to be going to the British Isles for a speaking engagement, and made the decision along with his wife, because he had some things to take care of, that he was going to send his wife and his four daughters ahead of him, and he was going to follow. And so Horatio, his first name, sent his wife, the four daughters, he was going to follow them, and after a certain period of time, he received a telegram from his wife, "Saved, alone. What shall I do?" Lost all four daughters in that shipwreck. His wife is there, survived. Saved, alone. What shall I do? And so as this man traveled in a boat to Europe, to England, to see his wife, the words that we're going to sing in just a minute, penned in the 1800s, were penned by this man as he went to meet his wife. "It is well with my soul." Jesus says, "In me you have peace. Don't be afraid." Let's sing.